Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and for all the political drama over the fiscal cliff deal, it was, after all, a tax reform agreement, by and large, and one that we now know will affect some 77% of Americans, at least that's what we're being told, even though the focus was on that top 1% or so over $400,000 or $450,000. Let's talk about the cliff and your pocketbook with Richard Rubin of Bloomberg News. Richard, thanks a lot for joining us and for playing CPA for a day.
Yes, good morning. How are you?
Good. And listeners, if you have a question about the fiscal cliff's impact on your taxes, Richard is reporting on this. Feel free to call in, 212-433-WNYC. Maybe you fall into that $400,000 for an individual or $450,000 for a couple. Maybe you're well under that but have questions about your payroll tax changes or your tax deduction changes, 212-433-WNYC if you're trying to puzzle this out for yourself, 212-433-9692. Did any of you run scrambling in a panic on January 2nd yesterday to your tax advisor, say, what am I going to do, and get any advice or information that's worth passing along? 212-433-9692. And Richard, I want to jump to one of the things that I think is confusing here that isn't getting quite as much play as the top marginal tax rate. And that is that starting at $250,000 of income for an individual, $300,000 for a couple, there are caps to the tax deductions you can take. So can you explain how they begin to kick in and for which deductions and for whom?
Yeah, this is something that had been in the tax law for a number of years and disappeared for the past few years and is being brought back for these top earners. So unlike some of the other things, these start taking effect based on adjusted gross income, which is a line that you'll see at the bottom of the first page of your 1040. And so if you have AGI of $250,000 and up, or $300,000 and up if you're a married couple filing jointly, then you start. There's two separate things. One is called the personal exemption phase out, which we in Washington call PEP because it's that exciting. What that does is reduce your personal exemptions gradually over as your income goes up. So the personal exemption is something that everybody gets. It's for 2012, it's $3,800 per person. So if you have a two-person household, then it's $7,600. As your income goes up, you gradually lose that, and by the time they haven't put out final numbers yet from IRS, but by the time you get close to that $400,000 mark in adjusted gross income, you'll have no personal exemption left. So it basically claws all of that back.
So that's a few thousand dollars potentially for somebody who's below the $400,000 bracket, but not that much below it.
Right. Exactly. And then the other thing is what's called PEAS, which is a limit on itemized deductions. It's called PEAS because there was a congressman named Don Pease who created it. Some people get bridges named after them. Other people get tax increases.
Huh.
And so what that does is limits itemized deductions. So you take that $250,000 level, calculate how much for a single person, calculate how much your adjusted gross income is above that threshold, so say $350,000, call it, so you have a $100,000 difference. Then you take 3% of that number, so $3,000, and then, no, three, so $300,000.
Here's the language that I've got, which may be the simplest way to say it. Subtract 3% of the amount by which your gross adjusted gross income exceeds $250,000.
Right.
To calculate the total loss of deduction, right?
Right. So $3,000, and then you can subtract that $3,000 from your deductions, your itemized deductions.
Right.
And that one, unlike the personal exemption phase out, goes all the way up the income scale. So the personal exemption phase out really hits in that 250 to 450 group.
Mm-hmm.
The limit on itemized deductions goes all the way up. So everyone earning above that will lose, and almost everyone up there itemizes their deductions. So everyone will lose something, and that's up to a maximum of 80% of your itemized deduction.
So that, wow. So,
yeah,
does,
oh yeah.
So that's a lot of money. That could be a lot of money lost to charity, too, for example, right?
Exactly. The charitable groups, the nonprofit sector, opposed putting this back in, but they lost.
And, well, let's take a caller with another question. 212-433-WNYC. Mark in Westchester, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is about the alternative minimum tax. When it originally was instituted, I believe it was to reduce deductions in the same sort of way, and then it was set with a threshold that was intended to deal with people that were very, very well off. And over the time with inflation and with the salary creep, that level has stayed the same. And so alternative minimum tax has really come to take a bite out of my my income. You know, with two professional salaries, I'm around $180,000. And alternative minimum tax really takes a bunch of my deductions away. Will that level change, or how will the alternative minimum tax change with the new regulation?
Can you help him, Richard?
Yeah, so this is really good news for people who are threatened by the alternative minimum tax, and particularly those who never had to pay it. What this, the caller's right, that the income levels in the AMT, which is basically a parallel tax system that lets you take fewer deductions, had never been indexed for inflation. This law does that. And so they're permanently indexed for inflation. For 2012, there will be about 4 million households that pay it, and those are largely concentrated in high-tax states, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut in particular, because one of the deductions you can't take under the AMT is state taxes. So this law does sort of remove the threat. If Congress had done nothing, you would have had 32 million households affected by the AMT, which is about 20% of the country. This really keeps it targeted at people earning between 200,000 and 500,000 in high tax states.
So do you think that Mark, for example, since he identified his income as 180,000, is now going to get some tax relief from this bill because the AMT threshold is being pushed up?
Not really. He'll get tax relief compared with what would have happened if Congress did nothing. But I think people who've been paying the AMT will continue to pay the AMT.
Mark, I wish I understood it better, but it sounds like you should talk to your tax accountant, and maybe it's not going to be any worse anyway.
Yeah, I was hoping for good news, but at least it's not worse news, I guess. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. By the way, speaking of calling your accountant in a panic, which, you know, I've joked about a couple of times, maybe the first thing we should have said is that this is for the 2013 tax year. So, in other words, the 2012 tax year is what just ended. The taxes that people are going to file this April 15th are not affected because it's for the new tax year that just began, correct?
Yes. There are a couple of minor exceptions to that, but in large part, these effects, you'll start seeing the payroll tax cut vanish from your paychecks this month.
Right, and that's in the new tax year, 2013.
Right, exactly, 2013. And if you'll see paycheck withholding go up if you're making above these, you know, the 400,000-500,000 level, and other people will see basically no change.
And that's the other thing that most people didn't see coming, or still don't see coming, but that is going to affect almost every worker, I guess, because everybody pays the payroll tax. That's not in Mitt Romney's 47%, right? From dollar one of your paycheck, I think you start paying this 6.2% payroll tax for Social Security and Medicare. And there was a 2 percentage point break on that. That was part of the stimulus bill when the economy was in such a crisis in 2009. And that was intended to be a temporary break. It put Social Security into another multi-billion dollar additional hole because they depend on that money. So now that's expired. Neither side of the aisle was trying to make that tax cut permanent. And so there's going to be basically a 2% tax hike on all income up to about $113,000, right?
Exactly. So say that you're making $50,000 a year, you get paid twice a month, your paycheck will be about $42 smaller, starting as soon as you get your first paycheck of 2013.
Right, or 2% is an easy number to play with. So if you're making $50,000 a year, that means you're going to pay $1,000 more in taxes this year. It's that simple, right?
Exactly.
Let's take another call. Ed in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ed.
Hi. I get a pension, and I'm just trying to figure out how would that affect my pension check?
How would it affect your pension? It depends whether you're having taxes withheld from that pension check and whether you're – I don't know if you're talking about the payroll tax in particular or you're talking about the income taxes. It really just keeps going what's been in place as far as income taxes. So you won't see any change from the taxes withheld unless you're – it's a really large pension that will get you, you know, $400,000 to $500,000.
Ed, is your question whether pension checks – That income is affected differently from other income?
That's correct. I mean, it affected differently because I do get taxed on it, but I don't think that there's a Social Security tax on that anymore.
Aha. And I don't know the answer to that. Do you happen to?
I don't know the answer
pension,
to that.
Are pension checks subject to the payroll tax?
I'd rather not answer it and
okay.
say something wrong.
Well, we're going to crowdsource this one, and we're going to look it up. So, Ed, go to our webpage in a few minutes, and we'll get an answer for you real quick on whether pension checks are considered like payroll checks and the payroll tax comes out of it. I don't know the answer, but we'll look it up. And anybody who does know, post it to WNYC.org. And click on Brian Lehrer Show. We'll get one more in here. We got about a minute left. Hi, John in Manhattan. Real quick, what's your question?
I have income of about $200,000 now, and I give 20%. I give about $20,000 to charitable causes. I'm engaged to get married, and my partner is an executive who has an income of about $450,000. So, if we get married next year, it'll be an income of about $650,000. How will my charitable $20,000, you know, deduction be affected?
Oh, boy. Can you crunch that so specifically, Richard?
I don't want to get it wrong, but basically you would be definitely affected by that limit on itemized deductions because your income tax, you know, your adjusted gross income will be several hundred thousand above that threshold. So say you're $300,000 over that threshold, then you'll lose 3% of that from your itemized deductions. Your charitable deductions won't be worth as much. At the same time, your tax rate will be higher at the top end, then you would be essentially each dollar you contribute to charity gets a bigger match from the government. So there's sort of a win and loss for you in this one.
So John, I'm curious, do you want our listeners to vote on the question of should love trump the tax laws? Like, should you get married anyway, even though it's going to cost you?
I'm sure we'll get married anyway.
It would be a good reason to get married on January 1st, 2014.
Interesting point. We'll consider it.
If you haven't set the date, you might, you know, there might be consequences.
Interesting. Okay, at least we can end on that romantic note. Love does trump the tax laws for John and his betrothed. Thank you for your call. We'll just throw in that we've looked up on a couple of sites the question from the last caller, and it looks like, no, there is no payroll tax in pension checks, that
right.
Your retirement check is subject to income taxes but not subject to Social Security taxes, Medicare tax withholding, or unemployment taxes.
Right. I was going to say the same thing.
So we leave it there. So there, folks, is a little primer, or some of you like to say primer, on what the new tax law, the fiscal cliff deal, is going to mean for you in your 2013 taxes. And we thank Richard Rubin, reporter for Bloomberg News. Really informative. Thank you very much.
Sure. Thanks.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, we will begin a January series on guns. We have a great guest who's been with us before who's going to join us every Thursday this month, Paul Barrett, author of the book Glock, The Rise of America's Gun. And among the things we're going to do is start a vocabulary list. Like, do you really know what semi-automatic means? Do you really know what military style assault weapon means? We're going to answer those questions and compare the current debate post Newtown to what happened after the Stockton, California elementary school massacre back in 1989. So stay with us for Paul Barrett and the beginning of a series on what you're curious about but don't really know about guns in America. Stay tuned.